When Katrina smashed into the coast of Mississippi last week, the storm flattened communities and ripped apart lives from Pascagoula to Bay St. Louis. The flooding didn't stay long, but the wall of wind and water crushed houses, neighborhoods, and entire towns to kindling. The storm surge carried small boats blocks inland. Even enormous casinos built atop barges came ashore. One of them hit halfway up a Hilton hotel. Residents vow to rebuild, but much depends on the future of the gambling industry that's become the economic engine not only of the coast, but of the state of Mississippi. In a few minutes, we'll talk with the head of MGM, which ran one of the casinos that was destroyed last week, and we'll talk with the lieutenant governor of Mississippi about what's been lost, what can be saved, what can be rebuilt. Today, we'll look at Mississippi, its economic and cultural losses, and what the future may hold. Later in the program, I'll look at the secret medical records of Yasser Arafat. Rumors of AIDS and poisoning surround the death of the Palestinian leader last year. But first, the Mississippi Gulf Coast. If you have questions about the situation in Mississippi, if you're from the Mississippi coast and want to share a story that illustrates the place, the people, or the damage of Hurricane Katrina, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. Joining us now by phone is Kate McGandy, the city editor for the Biloxi Sun-Herald newspaper, and she joins us from her office in Biloxi, Mississippi. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's the situation like there today? Power, water, telephones? Are things beginning to work?
Yes, it's starting to come back slowly but surely. We are starting to get water. We are starting to get power. A couple of people even have cable. But the water systems are still slow coming. The sewage systems are starting to come back online, but that's slow going as well. And there's still some health concerns about that.
There was considerable infrastructure damage as well to bridges, causeways, that sort of thing, and highways as well.
That is correct. We were very lucky in that one of our main arteries, Interstate 10, had very minimal damage, mostly over in Jackson County on the east side of the state. But both of the water, the bridges that go over water to the county to the left, to the east and to the west of the middle county, were both washed out by the storm, so that's made slow going for travel here on the coast.
Are there places where people have not been able to get yet?
There have been some places that have been difficult to get to, and of course that's also been a problem for people bringing aid in and what have you. They're making inroads every day. We've got the CVs from Gulfport. Their home port is here on the coast, and the Navy CVs have been helping to clear out, and as well as, Army National Guard and Marines and just about everybody else you can think of. They've all been out there with heavy equipment making inroads and making travel a little bit more possible and safer.
What about the cleanup? Is that underway?
Yes, that is. As a matter of fact, we've got some folks going down to Jones Park, which is where the Gulfport Small Craft Harbor is, to do a story about cleanup there so that the Coast Guard can get into their station and the Department of Marine Resources can get out there to do some of their assessments, which they haven't been able to do because their offices in Biloxi were decimated over on the in Point Cadet, which is in the east part of Biloxi.
Mm-hmm. What about businesses? We've heard that, for example, I think the Pascagoula shipyard is up and working, yet the big refinery there is closed, and nobody knows when it might open at this
point.
They
had some problems with some flooding, which is affecting their refinery, and they're trying to get that back online as quickly as possible. But Northrop Grumman is actually got some folks back on shift work, and it's slowly coming back. As a matter of fact, two of the reporters in our newsroom today were eating McDonald's. So you talk about a sign of normalcy, that was it.
So you can go, restaurants are open, grocery stores, that sort of thing?
Yeah, they are starting to open up a little bit as the power comes back, and they're able to get back online with some electronics and cash registers and inventory and that kind of thing. You're seeing that come back, and obviously not everybody and not everywhere, but it's starting to come back slowly, yes.
And obviously it's going to be some time before industries like the casinos are back up and operating.
We've got a meeting with casino executives this afternoon to find out how they're going to be able to, or what their status is and when they're going to be able to come back online, or if they're going to come back online. There are some casinos earlier this week who had not decided whether or not they were going to rebuild here. So hopefully we'll get some of those answers.
Well, we may have some for you a little bit later in the program, so stay with us. But I did want to ask about this past weekend. This is a part of the country which is deeply religious. Were churches holding services?
Yes, as a matter of fact. We sent reporters out to churches all over the coast, and, you know, there were people who did not have churches left. I myself was raised Roman Catholic and belonged to a church in Long Beach, Mississippi that was washed away and just totally gutted by the storm surge. And we held services on the lawn of an elementary school in Long Beach, Mississippi, and there were about 3,000 people there. So, you know, the response was one of gratitude that people were still alive. And while there were still a lot of questions to be answered, faith-based questions to be answered, they were all pretty well attended. The services were, and there was somebody that said that they only had like 25 or 30 people from their congregation at their service, but there were people turning out and there were people there and people who were going to services even though their ministers weren't there or clergy weren't there. So I think that was a sign that people were looking for something and were turning to the church to get that.
Describe the scene for what does the sea look like?
Actually, I actually got down to the beach for the first time yesterday afternoon. Being a city editor, I've been in the newsroom for most of the time, but took some time yesterday and went down to the beach. And it looks, if you don't use your peripheral vision and you just look out on the water, you see what you would see every day. You know, it's a very calm body of water because we have the barrier islands that inhibit a lot of the surf that you would normally see, like over in Gulf Shores or even on the Atlantic or the Pacific coastlines. You don't get a lot of that wave action, and we don't get that here because of the barrier islands. And so it looks very much like it would on any other day until you start looking to your left and your right and you realize that there are no landmarks left.
One final question for you, and that is, if there was something that people in Biloxi wanted the rest of the country to know today, what would it be?
I think that they want people to know that while they do need help, you know, there's still a lot of people who are still trying to get just basic necessities and supplies and get to their insurance and get to FEMA and that kind of thing, that they are coming back and that they will rebuild and that it's not going to be a matter of years. They're hoping it'll be a matter of months and maybe a couple of short years, but that they will come back.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Kate McGandy, a city editor for the Biloxi Sun-Herald, and she joined us from her offices there in Biloxi, Mississippi. As we mentioned, the economic engine of South Mississippi was the giant casinos that rested on massive barges along the water's edge. Many have been smashed into the cities they once supported, leaving many to wonder about the region's economic future. One company helped answer that question today. We're joined now by Terry Lanny, the chairman and CEO of the MGM Mirage. He's with us by phone from his office in Las Vegas, Nevada. Nice of you to be with us today.
Oh, hi, Neil. It's good to be here.
You ran one of the biggest casinos there near Biloxi, the Beau Rivage. It was crushed. What are you going to do about it?
Well, there was a fair amount of damage. It wasn't crushed, and we certainly, our 150,000-square-foot barge, which was the casino and housing the restaurants, was not detached from its mooring. It could handle 20-foot surge. We ended up with a 24-foot surge. So there's significant damage to the interior, but we've already begun the removal of debris. Probably should have that finished by in the next day or two.
Really?
And we would expect, you know, we've given instructions to the William Yates construction company, which built the original Beau Rivage, is going to bring it back to its original glory. And we haven't given the exact date, but we've given them the go-ahead, and we've entered into a contract with them and given them the instructions for the long lead items. And I would certainly hope it would be less than a year, but that's still a little early to define that, to be back in business.
That's going to be an important vote of confidence for the region and for your employees as well.
Well, we've made that commitment, and there's 3,400 employees, and we've set up stations for them because obviously over a year's period of time, we are not in a position as a publicly traded company to carry that entire payroll for the whole period of a year, but we've committed for a period of 90 days from yesterday for all benefits, medical and payroll, for those employees. And we're employing a number of them. We have 70 of them already employed in some of the removal of debris. They've taken on that additional responsibility. We expect that number will grow to 300. We also have offered them the opportunities and setting up today a job center at the site in near our parking garage there in Biloxi, offering them the opportunities if they choose to come out to Las Vegas for our varying properties here. We have 12 hotel casinos here. And we've actually stopped hiring people here other than for critical positions that have to be filled immediately and offering them to our people in Biloxi, who are part of Beau Rivage, knowing that there will be a period of time from the end of their pay to the opening of the casino. We've also made a commitment to rehire all of those people back in Biloxi at Beau Rivage when it is ready to open again.
I understand you visited Biloxi to see what happened there.
I flew down Tuesday morning. That was the earliest we could obtain permission to go. As you know, I've probably have heard, the radars was out, at least as of Tuesday when we were there at the airport. So we had to fly in daylight hours. But I did get down there, have a chance to tour our particular facility, and used a helicopter to tour up and down the beach from Biloxi up to Gulfport. And it's devastating. There's no doubt about it. It's like a war zone.
Have you been able to find all of your employees?
We have set up a payroll-paying station, and we have, as of last night, I didn't get the numbers today, but we had 2,200 of our 3,400 people had been sent checks, or either in person they picked them up, or we wired them. Some went to Washington, some went to Maine. I mean, people have spread all over the country where they've gone, but our hope is that we will be in a position to have reached all of them. Fortunately, to date, we haven't found or discovered that we've lost any human beings, and that's our prayer and our hope that that will continue to be the case, who are employees of ours.
Terry Lanny, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Terry Lanny, Chairman and CEO of MGM Mirage. He was with us from his office in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're talking about the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, what's been lost economically and culturally, what may rise in its place. Mississippi's Lieutenant Governor joins us after the break. If you're from the region, give us a call. 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. What happened? What's been lost? What does the future look like from your point of view? Join us. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Along the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, Hurricane Katrina has left behind flattened cities and towns, shattered economies. We're talking today about the storm's impact on the state of Mississippi and what it means for the region's future. If you're from southern Mississippi, what happened to your community? Was it damaged by the storm or has it opened its arms to evacuees? Are you worried about the coast's future? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Gambling is a major contributor to Mississippi's economy. So is the oil and gas industry, shipbuilding, fishing, all of them damaged by the hurricane. Joining us now is Amy Tuck, Lieutenant Governor of Mississippi. She's with us by phone from her office in Jackson. Welcome and thank you. I know you're very busy. We appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you. Let me first of all say thank you to you for the coverage that you're providing on Hurricane Katrina, and especially in our state of Mississippi, so that our people will know the devastating effect that it's had on our state.
Earlier, we had the head of the MGM, Rajan, who said that they are committed now to reopen the Beau Rivage. That has to be good news.
Well, it is. It certainly is. There's a lot, you know, obviously there's a loss of jobs that we are anxious to see the rebuilding process begin in our state. We're still under the search and rescue efforts and trying to do all we can to help those who have just lost everything to rebuild, because as you know, we've lost 90% of the infrastructure on our coast, and a large part of our state in addition to that has been devastated by Hurricane Katrina. So, but to hear that businesses are looking to the future and they're saying, yes, we're ready to rebuild, that is very encouraging.
There are other industries that are severely affected. That huge oil refinery you mentioned earlier in Pascagoula, that's been closed.
It's my understanding that all efforts are now trying to, as you well know, the importance of that. So all eyes are focused on that. Of course, I know that you mentioned Northrop Grumman, our shipyard industry, which was, you know, we certainly want to get that up and running, because that, too, is just so many jobs in both Gulfport and Pascagoula. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. This won't take weeks. It won't take months. It's going to take an extremely long time. You know, it will take years for us to rebuild. But I am convinced that we have an unbreakable spirit and that we will get through this.
Let me also ask you, I think it was Governor Barber said yesterday that the number of the dead is about 200, and he thought that was a pretty solid number. Is that the estimate now?
Yes, sir. That is our understanding, that has been those that have been accurately identified, that there is about 200 casualties, but we do expect that number to continue to rise.
Mm-hmm. Has the federal government been as helpful as you had hoped it would be?
I will say this: yes, the federal government. Yes, to answer your question, it has been. We've been very grateful in Mississippi for the fact that our president has been here twice already and has offered the resources available to our counties and our cities and our state that have been devastated. But it's been encouraging because people in our state, they need a ray of hope. They need to know that that people are caring, that people are banding together, and that resources are on the way. So by the president coming and also having the Homeland Security, the Health and Human Service Secretary, along with the Vice President today, it has certainly, it has provided that hope and the reassurance that the federal government and their resources are here to help our state, along with our neighbors who have been devastated by this hurricane.
Can you take a call with us?
Certainly.
Let's get a caller on the line. 800-989-8255, by the way, if you'd like to join us. Email totn@npr.org. This is Barbara. Barbara's calling us from Bend, Oregon.
Good morning.
Yes,
hey.
Hi. Thank you for your coverage on Mississippi. I just have been feeling like New Orleans has gotten all of the focus. My question is Habitat for Humanity making a presence in Mississippi to help people rebuild their lives? I mean, it's very important to have jobs, but it's more important to have a home. And I'll take my comments off the line.
Barbara, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Barbara, thank you so much for your call. And you are exactly right. It is important now that our focus turns to housing and making sure that those victims do have a place to stay, that they do have a roof over their head, and they have a safe and secure environment in which to live and try to get their lives back to some sense of normalcy and get their children back into a safe environment. Habitat for Humanity has a strong presence in Mississippi, and they are on the coast. They are working earnestly along with the other charities who are trying to provide housing assistance. But I will certainly say this, the Habitat for Humanity has been there. They're on the scene. They're working and they're helping, and we're grateful for that.
Let me ask you a question. With gambling such an important contributor to state coffers, how is Mississippi going to make up the budget shortfalls?
Well, today we had our leaders and from the House and the Senate here on the state level. We met and we had our economist and our revenue estimating committee come and try to brief us along with some additional state officials. And obviously they said that, as you know, a large portion of our state's economy was essentially shut down when this happened. People were not able to go to work. As you have indicated already, businesses are not open. But that is gradually improving, and we are seeing more and more areas that are getting back up and they are running. During this period when the economic activity has been reduced in the southern counties, then economic activity has been increased in other parts of the state. There's been a tremendous influx of people into areas such as Jackson, and they're buying goods and the hotel rooms and renting. But there is still, we hope that as soon as we can begin the process of rebuilding, and that's like a main thing on our mind right now, that we expect the current quarter, however, is going to show a decline in employment for the state. We also expect to see reduced state revenues during this quarter. But as our economist indicated today, we expect the rebuilding process to begin rather quickly and then employment to hopefully be back to pre-Katrina levels by the end of the year. And this pattern of reduced activity for a short period, obviously, according to our experts, will be followed by a strong growth that is typical when we have situation and disasters such as this. But it will be a long process, but we hope to, you know, begin that as and earnestly work on it as much as we can.
Let me ask you a philosophical question,
sure.
if I could. Mississippi has been among the states that has always offered low taxes, small government. This is a period of time, and I certainly hope you're right that it's a short period of time, but it's going to be a period of time where people are going to need help from the state.
Oh, there's no doubt. And certainly we stand ready to assist. Our governor has indicated that we will have a special session in short order here in Mississippi. The leaders here are working together, House and the Senate. We all come together with our other statewide elected officials. And I think it's going to be that unity and that spirit of cooperation that's going to provide the tools to make sure that Mississippi is rebuilt rather quickly. Yes, Mississippi knows that we have our work, a large amount of work ahead of us. We also know that that the federal government is going to be assisting us as well. But as far as specifics, I think that in the coming days we're going to actually get some numbers and a better feel of exactly what we're going to encounter. And to then, I think it would be a little premature to make speculation about what the legislature will do, but except to say that they are here, they're ready to work, and with a spirit of cooperation and compassion like I've never seen.
Let's take another caller, if you would. This is Ken. Ken's calling us from Little Rock in Arkansas. Yes, Ken, go ahead.
Yes, I was just curious about the governor's talking about reestablishing the gambling industry and whether they're going to have this same silly rules that they have to build on the water. I've never understood that anyway, but it seemed like that put them at extra risk for these hurricanes.
Well, Ken, thank you for calling. There's basically been a lot of discussion about that since this has happened, and I can't predict what the legislature will do, but obviously that is a topic that many have been discussing and trying to decide how they feel about that particular issue. But when we have the special session, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that's not an area that you will see the legislature address, and it would be, like I said, I couldn't predict what will happen on that, but obviously we want to make sure that we make sure that people, that buildings are built constructively sound and in safe environments.
Well, it always seemed to me that it was a crazy rule, and it didn't make any. Nobody's ever been able to explain why they had to build gambling houses on water,
on navigable waters.
Yeah,
right. And that may be something that is revisited, and there has been an immense discussion on that since this happened.
Ken, thanks very much for the call. And Lieutenant Governor Tucker, we appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
We thank you so much for your coverage, and thank you for telling your listeners about our state of Mississippi. We appreciate you. God bless you.
Bye-bye. Amy Tuck, Lieutenant Governor of Mississippi, joined us by phone from her office in Jackson. Well, with names like Treasure Bay, Imperial Palace, Isle of Capri, the casinos that line the 26 miles along the Mississippi Gulf Coast promise an escape from everyday life. To ensure it, they were all, as we just mentioned, located offshore, built on riverboats and barges. Joining us now to talk about the role of casinos in the region is William Edington, an economics professor at the University of Nevada, Reno. He's with us from the studios of member station KUNR there in Reno. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you, Neil. Good afternoon.
Again, these were all on water. The lieutenant governor didn't exactly explain how come. So how come?
Well, I think that starts in Iowa in 1990 when they passed legislation that authorizes riverboat casinos in that state. And I think part of the rationale was to somehow prohibit the sinning that took place on casinos from spreading on shore. And so water plays a role of ablution, or at least a way of separating the activity of gambling from the good activities that take place on shore.
Anointed after by that, holy water, as it were.
As it were. And then after Iowa legalized, a number of other states followed with very similar legislation. Illinois, and then Mississippi, Louisiana, Missouri, and Indiana all had riverboat casinos.
How big a part of the Mississippi economy are they?
Well, it's fairly substantial. Like, the gaming industry in Mississippi is the largest taxpayer in the state, the largest employer in the state. They generate about 10% of the total tax revenues for the state of Mississippi, and generate about $2.7 billion in revenues, at least they did before Katrina basically destroyed the Gulf industry.
And the caller mentioned earlier the question about relocating on land. The lieutenant governor said they're going to take a look at that question when the legislature comes back, but it is a controversial question in Mississippi.
To an extent, I wouldn't be surprised to see them move onto land, but probably constrain how far onto land casinos could go. As was demonstrated with Katrina, the barges do not have the same kind of sturdiness or survivability that land-based buildings such as the casino hotels had. And it would probably be foolish to once again mandate that they go back out into the water. Riverboat gambling generally could be viewed as a form of symbolic regulation. It doesn't really serve any real regulatory purpose or public purpose except for zoning. And so I think there's going to be a very strong case to develop a land-based component to the Mississippi law.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a caller on the line. This is Marcus. Marcus calling us from Destin, Florida.
Well, good afternoon. I guess my original question was for the lieutenant governor. And let me say this. I'm a long-term Mississippi resident. Wasn't a big fan of riverboat gambling until I saw how it transformed the state. And it's good to have your money, sir. Your money is our money. But anyway, my big question is, with the gentleman talking earlier about getting the Beau Rivage and the casino industries back up and running as quick as possible, will the same effort be put into repairing the infrastructure of that area, because, you know, it's based on hotel rooms and transportation and all places to eat. People want to go there and do things, and if the casinos, if the area can't support the casino traffic, then you have problems.
They're all of a piece, aren't they, Mr. Eatington?
They are very much, and there are going to be interesting questions of priorities in the entire southern region over the next 6 or 9 months. My expectation is ultimately, probably within 12 months, the infrastructure and the facilities are going to be back to the standard that they were before the storm. But the questions of what do you address first are certainly going to be very heated.
Marcus, Destin, Florida, on the Gulf Coast, a little bit further east than Mississippi. How are things there?
Well, it's of course gorgeous, but you know, Destin was routinely sheltered from major hurricanes in the past, and as you know, last year we got pretty much devastated by Ivan, especially in the Navarre Beach area. And the main reason I'm asking this question is because Navarre Beach is still not back up to speed. We're a year and some months away from the hurricane last year, and there's still infrastructure problems. And I know that Biloxi took a huge hit. And I just can't imagine how the roads and, you know, the area, the roads coming into I-10 and 90, how that's going to support a major amount of traffic coming into the casinos, because most of your traffic, most of your casino business, I think, comes from out of state. Am I correct?
Well, most of the casino business comes from about a 100-mile radius, and so it's largely citizens of Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and Florida who come to the Biloxi Gulfport area. And you're right, it is a question of highway infrastructure, and if the roads are impassable or very difficult, it's going to slow down the willingness of people to visit that area.
Yes, sir.
Marcus, thanks very much for the call, and we wish you good luck recovering from last year's hurricanes.
Yes, sir. We'll see you again. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. There are projects along the Gulf Coast that were announced before this storm hit. As I understand, there were three big hotels and condo developments that were scheduled to be put up there. Are you convinced now that the Gulf Coast is going to be restored, that these casinos, in addition to the Beau Rivage, are going to be back?
Well, I think some of the casinos who were not performing well financially may just decide that they're not going to rebuild. But for the most part, I think out of the 12 that were there, at least 9 or 10 will come back. And like the Hard Rock Casino, which was scheduled to open on Labor Day weekend, was destroyed by Katrina, it will probably be rebuilt. It will perhaps create an opportunity for many of the, certainly the stronger companies, to go in and build perhaps much more efficient or more attractive facilities than the ones that were built in the early and mid-1990s.
Mm-hmm. And those casinos that were going up there, if they're going to be moved on land, obviously that would be more secure. They, as you suggested, might be restricted in how far inland they could move, keeping it a Gulf Coast industry. But at this point, how have they transformed that area? I mean, is it the Mississippi Gulf Coast, or is it Las Vegas Southeast?
Well, just for comparison, the revenues generated by the casinos in Biloxi and Gulfport are about the same as the revenues generated in the Reno Sparks area. And Reno had for a long time been the number two gambling community in the United States. It's now down to about number eight. And so Biloxi and Gulfport had been fairly sleepy in terms of the tourism that had prevailed from mm-hmm. the 1950s onward. And the casinos created a tremendous shot in the arm in terms of job creation, new capital investment, and a lot of spillover investment into other businesses in the area. Regrettably, all the other businesses have suffered the same fate as the casinos because mm-hmm. the devastation was so severe.
One of the attractions, as I understand it, to Mississippi for the casino industry was the relatively low percentage of the take that the state of Mississippi took out.
That is correct. Mississippi, along with Nevada and New Jersey, have relatively low tax rates. And part of the reason for this is the motivation for legalizing casinos was more in terms of economic development or tourism development than to generate tax revenues for the state, which is the case, for example, now in Pennsylvania, where there's a 52 to 55% tax rate on the proposed slot machine casinos.
And in addition, there's been a suggestion that in exchange for allowing some of those casinos to move onto solid land, they might raise that rate just a little bit and maybe help the state of Mississippi pay for some of the recovery.
Well, they may, but there's a delicate balance here. If the objective still is to have the casino industry serve as a catalyst for tourism development, you can't push tax rates too high before you make the profitability so low it will not attract the kind of financial capital you need to build the industry. This is an ongoing debate with casino industries all over the world. The Mississippi Gaming Commission does require, or does require under certain current statute, that companies must invest as much in non-gaming facilities as they invest in their casinos. And part of this is to get hotels and entertainment facilities and other non-gaming amenities into the properties.
William Edington, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
William Edington, director of the Institute for the Study of Gambling and Commercial Gaming at the University of Nevada, Reno. He joined us from member station KUNR in Reno. When we come back from a short break, we'll visit some of the cultural attractions of the Gulf Coast. I'm Yul Cohn, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're covering the state of Mississippi and the damage wrought there by Hurricane Katrina. Well, before the hurricane, before the casinos, the Gulf, Mississippi Gulf Coast had its own distinctive culture. And joining us now from Jackson, Mississippi, is Scott B. Williams, a craftsman and boat builder and the author of Exploring Coastal Mississippi. Nice to have you on the program today.
Yeah, nice to be here, Neil.
I know you grew up along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. What can you tell us that's distinctive about this part of the country?
Well, this the Mississippi Gulf Coast in particular, along of all the Gulf states, we have just some of the most fantastic boating opportunities of anywhere along the coast with the barrier islands offshore. There's five uninhabited barrier islands out there that are part of the Gulf Islands National Seashore. And I wrote the book Exploring Coastal Mississippi to help people find their way among these islands and all the bays and estuaries and rivers that empty into the Gulf along this coastline.
Mm-hmm. We think of it as the Gulf of Mexico. It's actually the Sound of Mississippi, isn't it?
Right, the Mississippi Sound inside the barrier islands there, and then there's the offshore coast beyond the islands. Most people that go to the beach don't see the outer beaches out there on the south side of the barrier islands, where the water's actually clear and green like it is in parts of Florida.
We heard so much about the loss of wetlands in the state of Louisiana, which may have contributed to the hurricane damage there. Have there been similar issues along the Mississippi Gulf Coast?
I'm sorry, what was that?
We heard so much about the loss of wetlands in Louisiana and how that may have contributed to the hurricane damage there. I wonder, has that been an issue along the Mississippi Gulf Coast? You're talking about these barrier islands and the sandbars and that sort of thing?
Right. Well, one thing that Mississippi does have, the barrier islands are still pretty much intact in Mississippi, and they do provide quite a buffer when hurricanes come in, although this is, you know, by far an unprecedented storm, you know, the amount of storm surge and the strength of it, but the barrier islands do break up a lot of that force, and if we did not have those islands there, the effects on the mainland would probably be even more devastating. Mm-hmm. Unlike Louisiana, they have lost a lot of the wetlands, and as you say, the barrier islands that provide that buffer.
Mm-hmm. What are you worried most that may have been lost in this storm?
Well, if the islands are intact, as they appear to be mostly intact, that will again provide buffers, you know, in the future, you know, so have it by having the island still there, that's a good thing. Hurricane Camille, when it came through, cut Ship Island into two islands. It divided it in half into East and West Ship Island, and I haven't had the opportunity to get out to the barrier island since the storm passed, but hope to do so as soon as possible to see what the effects are.
I know you have been down there, though.
Right. I went back 2 days after the hurricane hit, and then again Monday on Labor Day. Went back with my brother on Wednesday, who lived a few blocks from the beach in Gulfport, and we found that his home was reduced to just a slab. And then I went back to look for my sailboat, which was anchored in a bayou north of Pas Christian, and I couldn't even find the boat at all. It was completely gone, without a trace.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Many parts of the country with distinctive waterways are known for their distinctive style of boats.
Right.
Is that true for the Gulf Coast as well?
Oh, definitely it is. The Biloxi schooner is a particular type of sailing vessel that was very prevalent on the Mississippi coast in the mid to late 1800s when the fishermen there used these schooners in the oyster and shrimp trade because the waters of the Sound are very shallow, typically 10 feet or less. So they developed these 60 to 70 foot schooners with 4 foot drafts so they could work these islands. And then this became, later as they developed these boats, they became, you know, the fishermen would compete and start racing on, you know, in between shrimp and season. So they developed, you know, yacht clubs sprung up out of this, and sailing became a big pastime in the area.
Was the boat you lost based on one of these designs?
No, it wasn't. It was a more contemporary type sailing vessel.
As I understand it also, the Gulf Coast was sort of a playground for the rich in part as well.
Well, in historical times, especially around the late 1800s and early 1900s, the wealthy from New Orleans would go to the Gulf Coast and build, you know, second homes on the beach there to escape the heat and humidity of New Orleans. So that's why you see, or you did see, a lot of these beautiful mansions right on the beach that were built in this time period. And, of course, most of those, I'm sure, are gone at this point due to that storm surge. But they would go there to, you know, to spend the summer because the conditions in New Orleans back in those days before air conditioning were just about unbearable with the malaria and other diseases caused by this heat and humidity.
Let's get a caller on the line. Now, this is Margaret. Margaret's calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi. I was raised in Gulfport, and I just wanted to comment on the fact that the people of Gulfport are a very unique people. They have such a strong sense of community, and it doesn't matter if you just moved there or if you've been there for hundreds of years. Once you get there, you're family. And during Hurricane Camille, that was seen time and time again, where people's homes were completely devastated, but yet those people who were still left behind, the survivors, all stuck together, all joined together to help each other to rebuild. And that's what you're seeing now, even as we speak on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, people still pulling together, joining together. You're not seeing a lot of crime and looting. You might see those signs, you loot, I shoot, but you're not seeing a lot of that looting going on. You're just seeing a lot of people pull together and try to help everybody get through it.
Would you agree with that assessment, Mr. Williams?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think the people will definitely pull together, and everybody's going to work together to recover from this as fast as possible. The people of this coast have been through this before, maybe not to this extent, but they'll pull together and rebuild, and they'll help each other while they're doing it.
Margaret, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Right. Thank you.
And Scott Williams, let me ask you one final question before we let you go. How much has the arrival of the casino industry transformed that culture that you grew up knowing and Margaret grew up knowing?
Well, there have definitely been some changes. Before the casinos arrived, Biloxi and some of the beachfront towns were just quaint little fishing villages, you know, and you know, some people miss that aspect of it in some ways, but you can't argue with the positive aspects as well, you know, with the casinos coming in and some of the money that's being spent to improve other areas, you know, the roads and the effect on the entire state. But one of the being such a boating center, you know, where there's so many sailors and commercial fishermen, one of the more recent problems has been the desire for waterfront land. You know, with the development of newer casino projects and condominium projects, there's been a loss of some boat yards and marinas and facilities, you know, for working on both pleasure and commercial boats.
Mm-hmm. Is there one place in particular that you may miss if it's gone forever?
Well, it's hard to say one particular place. I'm going to miss all of it. I mean, if it's gone forever, and I know some parts of it are, the marina where I lived on my boat for all, you know, over a year at Point Cadet in Biloxi. I'm not sure how long it's going to be before that marina recovers, but parts of Bay St. Louis, you know, just incredibly neat little town just to go hang out in a restaurant and look out over the water. It's going to be tough to see that gone.
Scott Williams, thanks so much for being with us.
And thank you.
And good luck to you.
Thanks.
Scott Williams, a native of Mississippi, the author of Exploring Coastal Mississippi. He joined us from his home in Jackson, Mississippi.